can't drink it at the moment anyway because the tap water's
oh, there's full a situation. Of shite
and the bottled water is being recalled, so...
Well, I started my drinking 3 of them a day yesterday and didn't realise until I came in today looking at the map with you. And Robbie Riddles.
And I was like, where's the boil? Do you call it a boil notice?
Boil water notice, boil. Yeah.
Yeah, Hannah was like, oh, where is that? You know, whereabouts in Dublin? And I was like, well, a few parts. And she's like, we just look at Swords there. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I'm bumping this into myself.
I was like, there's a red line over Swords.
You're not even meant to brush your teeth.
Have you got the stomach cramps, hon?
This is TV Worth Talking About. Shrine Podcasts presents Dublin Murders.
Hello and welcome to Shrine Podcasts presents Dublin Murders. It's Rebecca here.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Hannah Cyrus choking.
On her
water.
Parasitic water.
How are you?
If so? I end up sick now, Brendan, you'll feel really bad.
Yeah, fingers crossed it's not what we're doing the podcast. It's a small enough room. How are you all this week, guys?
Yeah, really good. How are you?
Very well. Hannah?
Oh, I'm still recovering. Now, I had a rice cake and then I started laughing.
Listen, we've had an eventful week in terms of television with Dublin Murders. So episodes 3 and 4 were... extremely eventful. We saw a full moon in the form of a naked man covered in red wine dancing around the woods. A typical Friday night for us, am I right? And of course, as well, I missed this the first time. I had to rewind it. An appearance from Fran from Love Hate, a.k.a. Peter Coonan.
Was he in the first
I knew
episode?
It was Fran. Yeah. You've just confirmed
it's
it for
his
me.
Voice.
All he right, Niji, me old pal.
Yeah, he's got such... We need to cut just a clip of Brendan doing that.
What was it that we did? That was, what did you say? When we were podcasting about Lion and Judy, and Brent just said something, we were like, we're going to cut that and use it against you forever. Can you remember what it was?
No, and I'm glad.
I'll have to go back and get it. Yeah, but Peter Coonan's voice is very, very distinctively deep.
Yeah.
He's like, all right.
That's like me with the rice cake. I'm going to read out the recap now in that voice.
I know. Other notable moments include Cassie's twin / doppelganger, Lexi, being found brutally murdered. That was very shocking.
What's going on?
And Cassie and Rob having the ride.
Yeah, but also, I was more shocked by his reaction. We all knew the ride was coming, let's be honest.
It ended.
No, I didn't.
Ah, Brendan, would you come
no,
on?
No, I didn't. I really thought they were more brother and sister than anything else.
No, they were sexual.
I mean, they could still be going by this show.
I mean, listen, was hoping for a ride, but I mean, guys, I have to say one thing.
Now, when we say
you're
we're going to clip
that,
up.
Damn it.
When we say we're going to clip up.
I was hoping to see a bit more action. I'm not going to lie to you. I felt like it was this big lead up and then there was a little kiss and then the next morning they wake up. I was like, nah, come on.
Yeah, it was a bit PG-13, wasn't it? Like
I just... What did they do in the car after the kiss as well?
That's what I thought about for ages.
But that's a long
because
journey.
They were in the middle... Right, this is what I was thinking about, right? So they had this big sexy kiss and then they were obviously like, right, it's on.
On the side of the road.
Yeah,
like,
and they're like up bet into the Dublin mountains. They'd ages to go back. She lives in Black Rock. I was like, what were they doing in that
what
car?
What did they do in the car? Like, was his hand on her leg? Like, what were they talking about? Was it awkward?
I couldn't agree more. I thought about that like literally for about 20 minutes.
If we ever get to interview any of the cast members, we'll be like, what did you do in between then? They're like, it's not real. But I was wondering the same
it
thing.
It is real.
Someone wrote on Twitter that Dublin Murders has more twists and turns than an Irish country road. And they're not wrong. They're not.
Beautiful writing.
There is a lot going on, guys. So hopefully our recaps of this week's episodes will help make things a little clearer or else confuse you even more.
They might not.
It's
Let's
hard
be
to
honest.
Is it Hannah or Brendan? Who's doing which episode?
It's me.
Hannah's going first.
I hope I can get through this here, guys. It's touch and go here with the rice cake.
And you know when you think the rice cake's gone, then like 10 minutes in, it just comes back up again.
Awful.
Poor thing.
Right, well, we get going.
Go on.
Yes.
Right, get comfortable now.
This is episode 3.
Episode 3, the first of this week. It went out on Monday at 9 p.m. and it goes out tonight on RTE.
Mm-hmm.
The episode opens in 1985. Shane, Johnny and Cahill run through the forest as Adam, Jamie and Peter watch on. Have I got all those names correct? I am really getting mixed up between the two groups, age groups in the 80s in
Shane,
the forest. Shane, Johnny, John Devlin.
Jonathan, yeah.
Cahill.
And Cahill.
Yeah.
Cahill
Adam,
with the striking
Jamie,
eyes.
Jamie, Peter.
Yeah, are yes. the three younger, yeah.
Okay. So They look suspicious. Jamie appears to be timing the situation on a Mickey Mouse watch. So they're kind of watching the older gang. They're inside a hedge. The guys can't see them. Shane falls behind the older gang. Johnny and Carl are running ahead. But he catches up to Johnny and he's freaked out. He's convinced that someone is laughing at them. Remember this point. It comes back later on. Later.
I'm
but still in that time.
Them.
Yeah, laughing at them. That's a clue. Write your clues down.
Okay.
Later, but still in that timeline, Adam and his parents sneak out of their house late at night, presumably heading for the English boarding school. There seems to be loads of time jumps. I don't think we're watching
all
these chronologically
over the shop, yeah.
At all in any timeline whatsoever.
Doesn't help the confusion.
Does not helping. So as they leave, but brilliantly written, as they leave, we see the word changeling spray painted on their house. So that
obsessed.
Great film.
I was going to say, all I could think of was the movie.
Belcher of a film.
We'll get to a theory on that later.
Yeah, it brings up the whole Fetch thing, brings up the whole Lexi thing. But before their car can pull out onto the road, Jamie's mother, Alicia, please God, that's the correct name, she appears, she's distressed, she's in the middle of the road, she's stopping them from driving off, she's pleading for information about her daughter and Peter's disappearances. Then we cut to the intro. Now, we didn't talk about this last week, the intro music is great.
I love it. Oh, break my ringtone.
Yeah, I'm really, really into it.
Give me the music on Instagram.
The Sherlock music is still my ringtone on my phone from way back when.
Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock.
Yeah.
Yeah, the number one Sherlock.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stephen Moffat, Mark Atiss.
I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's gorgeous.
Guys, we spoke about the time I bumped into Moriarty and Tiger on that show, special place in my heart.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episode begins with a wide shot of everyone involved in all of the incidents, 1985 and present, that have happened in Knocknarie Wood so far. They're on a board in the police station. Everyone. So that was actually really good.
We love a board.
Love a corkscrew board. And it was kind of good to see all the faces, remind yourself. And we hear a voiceover of a woman sobbing down the Garda information phone line. Just sobbing, doesn't say anything. Then we see Rob and Cassie, they're on site in the wood. Sophie, who's leading the forensic investigation, asks Rob for more uniforms on the ground as they've been dealing with hassle from passers-by. Mark it in your notes, guys. It's a clue.
I really like her.
Same.
So do I.
I really like her.
Do you know why, Brendan? Because she gets shit done.
Yeah.
No, guys,
but I love her as an actress.
I know her from somewhere.
Yeah, so do I. And I tried to Google Sophia Dublin Murders and I couldn't find.
Is her name Sophia?
I think so.
And you know as well, like at one point I was convinced that she was in a Maltesers ad.
You said that last week. I don't know. She was reminding me of Luther's wife, but it's not her either.
She does, yes.
Isn't she a bit like her?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know where she's from, but I just like, she's just getting shit done. She's up there, she's looking after the site. I trust her wholeheartedly in every decision.
I feel like we'd all get on with her.
Really now, we'll get on with her, I think. So Rob agrees to organise this and he leaves with Cassie to meet Sandra Scully, but not before they're questioned by Dr. Hanley, who's got issues for fucking days, about how much longer his work is going to be disturbed, and Cassie calls him a massive dick.
Now,
thank you.
I love that.
Can I just jump in here quickly? Do you remember last week I wondered if Dr. Hanley was in the Love Pork ad? You know, the bike?
Yes!
No, so anyway, it turns out it wasn't him because Rebecca's lovely boyfriend sent me a picture going, is this who you thought that was? And the second I looked at it, I was like, yeah, that's not him. But I found out where I do know him from.
Go on, so.
Go on.
He was Sharon Horgan's brother in Catastrophe.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. We knew he was familiar.
Yeah.
Do you know that
I mean, we saw a bit more of him this week, didn't we?
Pork.
We saw the whole of the moon. Where are we now?
I'm sorry.
That story just
drove
me because I'm thinking about the time, right, when I used to go to mass. I swear to God, this was the talk of the parish. Of YouTube in the church,
where
you would
is
have been
this going?
Pissing yourselves. Our priest was in an ad for peas, but the ad was like really expecting that. But it was when you had like
you.
Three channels, and I think the ad was on before like Winning Streak or something. We'd all see
a really high rotation. Like, that's a high listenership.
Mass was ramped the next Sunday, and we were like, it is
he
him.
Must have been
and
so
then
famous.
He said it in a homily. It was him.
Our priest that out of side jobs.
He was kind of a younger, cool priest.
All right. In an
yeah,
ad
I know.
For
I thought
peas.
They were meant to live without wealth and without. Anyway, look.
Fame, money.
Money, all the things that come with being an ad before Winning Streak. But
peas.
There you go. Now, this is a sad bit, so get serious. So a hearse containing Katie's body drives slowly down a road, passing press and neighbours and grieving family. Alicia's there. She comes, so that is Jamie's mum.
Yeah.
She comes crying to Margaret's door and says, I know, anytime you need me, I'm here because I know. So basically she's like, let me know if you need any help. We're both in distress. Something very
thing.
Weird has happened
she's
to our kids.
She's a bit spooky,
in the woods.
Isn't she?
Mad stuff going on with her.
Yeah.
Cassie and Rob are in Sandra Scully's kitchen. Now, Sandra Scully seems to live on the same road.
Can I say one thing about this, guys? About Sandra Scully? Yeah, they're all on the same road.
Yeah.
Her belt. It was such an ode to 2006.
I didn't know it
was I had no, that I didn't belt. I had the exact brown belt. And
describe
I used to wear.
It.
It's like big kind of fake suede rings, like circles.
I know, I could picture
with
exactly.
Silver on top and a chain that ties it all together.
I
just thought that was a standout moment. All I wrote was Sandra's belt.
Sandra Scully is one of those names. Like you'd never just call her Sandra. I don't think she'll always be Sandra Scully. You know, yes. One of them. So she admits to not telling the truth about her relationship with Jonathan Devlin. The detectives press her on this and she says she broke up with him because they were kids. That was it. No real reason. Don't believe her. And she said she did know Margaret at the time and her and John had split up by the time that Jamie and Peter went missing.
She also said she used to wank him in the woods.
A hand shandy under the moon.
She was like, what did you want me to say? I used to wank him in the woods. I was like, oh my lord.
And he looks like such a prude, whatever way they have him dressed now. He can't.
It's almost like he's like very priest like.
Wanked in the woods by Sandra.
But you know what I mean? He seems very like he's really religious now or something and they have a real religious family. You know, it's an unusual situation.
Yeah, he's repenting, I think, for something. So Rob then asks if John got Sandra pregnant and she looks absolutely stunned and says, what's our phrase for really good lines?
Killer line.
Here we go. That old bitch, Mrs. Fitzgerald, good Catholic woman, me gash. Best thing I've ever heard.
Ever.
You wouldn't want to believe a thing that comes out of her mouth. And she stops the interview there. A bit devastated because I would have gone to war for Mrs. Fitzgerald last week, to be honest.
But
we had no Mrs. Fitzgerald this week at all.
None.
Only her when the hearse went by. She was doing the, what you call that thing?
Blessing herself.
Yeah. You know me in religion.
You were literally like blessing yourself.
I literally was
thing.
Doing Vogue by Madonna. Yeah. She was only there for really briefly. But Sandra's like, she's pure evil.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
Sandra
is Mrs. Fitzgerald like, all, like, you know, is she on?
Well, I
something?
Don't think Mrs. Fitzgerald's evil. I think she knows everything. And Sandra doesn't like that.
Mm. I also just didn't like her Magdalene Laundry comment though last week.
Sorry, very good point.
I just was like,
that.
I do think there's a sinister streak to her.
We will see. Outside Sandra's house, Rob and Cassie spot a journalist they know. His name is Mr. Boyle. He pushes them for information on Katie's murder for a suspect. They get him to leave. Then Cassie says to Rob that she's worried someone's going to recognise him. Well, fucking obviously, I'm glad someone is. It's an absolutely mental situation.
Yeah.
He's the image of himself.
Yeah.
He actually is.
And he's very good looking. Yeah. That if I saw a telly, a thing on telly of a detective, I'd be like, that guy's gorgeous. Oh wait, he looks like Adam.
And you, he's the mean? Only person out of everyone that was in the woods that doesn't live on the same road, and people keep circling on pages his name. So I would also have cause for concern about that. Cassie makes the point that Alicia hasn't seen him properly yet. Back at base, the team is now Quigley, Sam, Cassie, and we got no real Mr. O'Kelly this week either.
No, not really.
Not
no.
Much of him, no,
there was a little bit, I think, in the next episode, but like not much, no.
So back at base, the team discuss French tracksuit man who made the threatening phone calls to Jonathan Devlin about the motorway. Rob sends Sam down to Glenskeehy to see if anyone else has received similar calls or may recognise the drawing that they've done up with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Quigley's up next. He fills the team in on what he's been doing. He's been revising the records from 1985. He said he spotted that Cahill Mills, Jonathan Devlin and Margaret Byrne, their stories hold throughout. They never change from their first interview to their last.
Mm-hmm.
Shane Waters doesn't change his story, but he does ask to go to the toilet, smack his face off the wash base and has to go to hospital for stitches. And then when he's back in the interview again, his story is aligning with the others.
Can you say Marcella?
Can you say Marcella? She hasn't seen it. We'll just leave that there.
Yeah.
But can you say Marcella?
Jesus.
Rob checks the records and notices that Shay needed 7 stitches and remarks he wasn't playing. Sam asks, what happened to Adam? Thank you. After all this. And Cassie covers for him saying, we're neck deep in it together, Rob. Absolutely. Is this a sackable offence?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel
he
like
should have been hired.
Absolutely perverting the course of justice beyond belief.
Yeah.
It's
he seemed to kind of get kicks out of it as well in this episode. He was kind of getting thrills.
A different side to him now in this episode.
I'm horrified.
Asking questions about himself. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, he.
Yeah.
Rob and Cass are now alone in the office. They try the burner number again. So they're basically calling the number that's been threatening Jonathan Devlin. The scene cuts to a tall, dark-haired man outside a news agent's. His phone is ringing. Then he enters the Malin Davis construction offices. In what must be a different timeline, I wrote at the time because I was writing this as I was watching
it. Yeah.
Cassie is a thick fringe. She seems to be on top of a hill near some ruins. Her phone rings. A man's voice says, "Lexi, where are you?" Frustrated, she says she's nearly home and she runs off.
You'd miss your phone battery being that good, wouldn't you? If someone rang my phone 50 million times, I mean, they wouldn't. It would go straight to voicemail.
And you were on top of a hill in the Dublin mountains.
Yeah, the signal.
You're not getting coverage up there.
No.
So Caddy, I keep calling her Caddy, Katie's white coffin is displayed in the Devlin sitting room and the family sit around it. Simone, the ballet teacher, is there too. Rosalind asks what she's wearing and Simone says what Katie's wearing. And Simone says she chose Katie's favourite practice dress for her to be laid to rest in. Bit weird that the dance teacher is putting her in the dancing outfit.
And the dance, like the way it was filmed, the ballet teacher sitting beside Jonathan and the wife is facing him opposite the other side of the coffin.
Great shots in this, and I think they have a lot of meaning.
The continuity was really good as well, because later on in the episode, the candles are up, like they're newly lit, and then later on in the episode, they're completely burnt down. I was like, mother of God.
You are noticing things between the belts.
I love a candle.
To have for us. So Margaret gets upset upon learning that the coffin is lined with dark blue velvet rather than pale pink silk. This is a major issue. She turns on John again and she does this. She did this in the last episode. She's like, it's you, isn't it? Always you. You stole my daughter. You were stealing her to go away and now you're stealing her again. This you thing. She is beaming at John over something. Mm. She turns to Simone. What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. You're a thief and a robber. Didn't know what she was talking about there, unless she's talking about the child.
Robbing her daughter, I think.
Potentially. John roars. She has every right to be here. Rosalind attempts to calm down her mother, who has broken into a fit of tears. She's devastated that she wasn't consulted on the colour of the coffin lining.
I wonder, is she also accusing her of robbing her husband?
I think so too.
Also, Rosalind and Simone are close, aren't they? They're very close.
I think that John and Simone were having an affair.
Yeah, they looked very cosy beside that coffin.
And I think there is clues in the way the scenes are portrayed and shots are shown to us in this show.
Yeah, there's something going on.
I think
there.
It's very clever written. So at that exact moment then, Jess, the other twin, roars, I'm pink. Katie's favourite colour is blue, stupid. I'm pink and she's blue. And Simone leads her out of the room. Now, there's something going on there.
Yeah. Mm.
And if this isn't twin swap 101, and the mom knows, but she can't express it because she's so unwell and no one will believe her and she's getting confused between the twins, I don't know what is.
Yeah, the mom knows that her favourite colour. Do you know what I mean?
We're still on twin swap.
But forever and always, Brendan, because I'm right.
There's too many twins. There's something to do with twins.
That's fair to say.
Yeah.
So Simone leads, it is Jessica, Jessica out of the room. Margaret says, I should have been consulted. Now John says to her, you were asleep, like you're always asleep. Margaret says, I'm not asleep, I'm ill. And John snorts in her face.
Is he drugging her?
I think so too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think she's like, I'm not asleep, I'm ill.
Medicating her, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Someone is.
Someone is, yeah.
Yeah. And I also think that line, I'm not asleep. She isn't. She's like, I'm noticing everything.
I'm awake,
I know that's not my daughter. I know what's going on with the coffin. I might be able to express it. Maybe people aren't believing me, but I'm not asleep.
Yeah.
Obsessed. I had to pause that for a minute and just take it in. I had chills. Quigley, back in the
police station.
Thank you. Back in the police station, Quigley has found late Detective McCabe's notebook. So Detective McCabe worked on the 1985 case. He died of cancer, but he worked on the case right up to his death. We learned about him in the last two episodes. He says, he reads it out basically to Rob, and it reads, there's something here and it hates us. It is malevolence. Those children were taken as a tide, a reckoning to settle an account. You're never going to find them. This place is laughing at us. Guys.
Like, I'm just not into that side of things.
And I really am.
The supernatural stuff, no. Like, get it away from me. And they keep using, so obviously the laughing thing keeps coming back up, and reckoning, the word reckoning keeps getting used.
Couldn't agree more. The word reckoning does keep coming
up. Is the word reckoning a religious word?
Probably.
I think it is.
Probably? Possibly?
I think it is.
There's a lot of supernatural elements,
and I love that.
So do I.
I like, because I love that they're going to tie it back into reality and truth.
We're not used to that, though. We love a crime drama that's very, you know, DNA scientific. Do you know what I mean?
But that's why I think this reminds me of particularly season one of True Detective so much, because that was of a very similar vein. Like the way Matthew McConaughey's character would have spoken about time and space and the stars would have almost seemed supernatural. But then the ending and who ended up being the murderer, it was all just very normal. You could have just written it out very linearly, but the way it was presented, I found very creative.
Definition of reckoning: the avenging or punishing of past mistakes or misdeeds.
Okay.
So he was involved in 1985, so now his daughter's dead.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
But why did 1985 happen in the first place?
Exactly.
And this, Deck McCabe's notebook, the word reckoning there is used speaking about the first two disappearances.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Before that.
Exactly. Yeah. So Rob passes it off. He said McCabe had cancer, must have been the morphine talking. But it was actually written in 1987, so before he was too ill. Rob tells Quigley to lose the notebook and he shreds it so fast.
Like,
so fast.
Before he could blink.
Swung around, thing was shredded. And I was like, no! So Quigley shreds it and remarks that McCabe keeps his reputation. What's going on?
But Rob was like, I didn't mean to shred it.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, people are going to think he's barking at the moon.
I'm not trusting Rob, guys.
No.
At all.
No.
Sam and Cassie have a date night beer and takeaway in her apartment. It's very cute. He says he thinks a lot of her and it looks as if he was about to say I love you, and she freaks out because it's still potentially early days for them. Dr. Hanley watches the investigation in the woods ominously. It's nighttime and he's in the shadows. He is so fucking weird.
Ready to do the full Monty.
Like, yeah, literally, like, that scene is about...
Because I actually was the shock of that. I was so shocked.
So weird.
And at first, go on.
Paul Merlot,
but so I thought that was blood first off. Same. I was like, oh, why? Where did he get that from?
I was like, is he riding the altar? I was so confused.
But, like, he is. Like...
It's just
dry riding a slab.
Yeah, literally.
Guys.
It's so weird.
No, it's not awesome.
The next morning, John holds a vigil at Katie's coffin. Looks like he's been sat there all night. He can barely stand. He's weeping. Now, we stay in that scene for a very long time. Considering the last scene was literally a flash, Hanley in the woods waiting to ride the altar, then straight into maybe a 30-second long scene of just John crying at his daughter's coffin.
Yeah.
And he kind of falls over when he gets up.
Oh, he's all over the shop.
Yeah. I was like, is he, you know what I mean? Like, obviously he had never really slept. Yeah.
There's something going on in that house. Mm. Now, Sam and Quigley head to, I forgot the name of that place. What was it called that I said that they were going off to?
Kinch.
Begin with a G?
Kin, not Knocknery.
No, not Knocknery.
It has an S in it.
Had it written down here. No, it literally has a G and a K.
Oh.
Anyway, this is great podcasting, isn't it? So just make up
a
your
D
own
and
name.
A G.
They go up to where the students live.
They're gone up to where the students live. Mm. So basically they're basically been sent up there by Rob. They kind of stop at the ruins on the hill. It looks like it was where Lexi was. They spot Paint Man's He Rises sign on the Mal and Davis construction billboard. So all those things are in the same place, basically. Knocknery, the sign.
Yeah.
Where Lexi was, all in the same area. So Katie's coffin is lowered into the ground. The devastated procession watch on. This includes Rob/Adam. Mr. Boyle is there taking photos. Garth Phelan is there, Reb. Alicia, she looks right at Rob, but he's confident that she doesn't know who he is. No Mark Hanley, though. Rosalind loses it and falls to the ground as dirt is scattered on her sister's coffin. She's comforted by Simone, so not her family, Simone. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Holding her very tightly.
Not getting any answers, but like in the best kind of way. So Sam and Quigley pull up to a country manor. Apparently students live there. They own it. I know it's a boom. What is it with people owning property they've no right to own?
That house is absolutely stunning.
Absolutely. Out of this
That's
world.
A wedding gorgeous. Venue.
Stunning venue that couldn't afford.
It's gorgeous.
Well, I can't remember the name of the place.
Yeah.
So they leave a note under the door. Someone watches them leave from an upper window. They head to the pub to bribe locals with drinks, but it doesn't work. A sketchy looking fellow walks outside to a car. Lexi's in it. Also, the guy whose phone was ringing earlier on when they tried the number that is threatening John Devlin, they're both in the car. Cassie and Rob quiz John on the man who made the phone calls to him. back in his house. He says, it's a standard Dublin accent, I can't tell you anymore. Rob asks, are you still in touch with Cahill and Shane? John says, no. Do you remember Jamie, Peter and Adam? Of course I bloody do. Why did Shane bash his face off a wash basin? I don't know. Where's Shane? Dead, probably. So Shane, I'm presuming, is...
Paint man.
Yeah.
Okay. John sits on the edge of the bed. So basically, Rob and Cassie leave. John goes upstairs. He sits on the edge of the bed that Margaret's in it. He tells her that Rob and Cassie asked about the three kids and they both look worried. And it's probably the first time that Margaret's had a facial expression that isn't just pure distress. She's reacting to a moment for the first time. Rob tells Cassie he thinks John is lying. She disagrees. He thinks he may be protesting the dig in case it unearths Peter and Jamie's bodies. Fair. I think we all kind of have a similar feeling about reasons why that dig may or may not be happening. Rob's mum texts him. She wants to see him. Rob and Cassie are back in the woods. He asks Dr. Hanley in his office why he wasn't at the funeral. And so the office is basically this kind of container on the side of the wood. They have all of the stuff that they found, all of the artifacts, and he spots Jamie's watch. It's a Mickey Mouse watch, right? Or it has some sort of drawings on it that we recognise from the opening scene. It's really muddy. They found it in the dirt during the dig, but didn't document where because they thought it was rubbish. Rob goes to the basement of the police department and stores the watch in an evidence box. He is super freaked out. Yeah. I don't know if he stored the watch as new evidence.
Yeah, or
it
for his own.
Like it
didn't look like
it. For his own?
Yeah.
If he was trying to put it in like it was found years ago.
Was it Jamie's or was it his?
It was his.
I thought it was his.
Is it his watch?
I think it might have been.
Jamie is holding it and timing something. She's timing when they're watching Cahill, Shane and Johnny running through the wood. She's like watching.
Okay.
I'm presuming she's timing it, but she could have been holding his watch. I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's down in the basement now. I feel like there needs to be more supervision down there. He's got way too much access.
And more lighting. It's very dark.
Yeah, there's a lot going on down there. It's mad. So he goes to meet his mum with Cassie and a calf. His mum's called Claire. She has spotted Alicia on the front page of the newspaper. She's worried that Alicia will start on Rob again. Claire suggests writing a letter to the paper, giving her side of the story. Rob tells her, that will fuck me up. Claire starts to cry, but she's raging at Alicia. She was behind everything, the fire starting, the stone throwing. She basically blames this woman for tearing their family apart and having to have her son move to the UK.
Yeah.
Why does she get away with it? But Cass reminds her that Alicia never saw her child again and yours is sitting right in front of you. Claire leaves in tears and Cassie walks her out. It's night time in the woods. Dr. Hanley lights the bonfire, gets naked and covers himself in red wine and starts spinning around, dancing and screaming. He hugs the altar and then is lit up by the torches of two Gardaí. Back in the... but I don't know what else to say.
It was bizarre.
Back in the station, Rob and Cassie question him. Implied that he was getting off on the thrill of the murder scene. Hanley says that isn't what he was doing and they wouldn't understand, but he admits to sleeping there for a couple of nights. Cassie says all bodily fluid samples have been taken from the body and the site, sweat, saliva and semen. Would they be yours, Mark? I didn't touch her. Why would I do a thing like that? Well, I mean, Mark, come on. It doesn't look very good right now. Mark asks Rob and Cassie, do you know what Knock Nari means? It means the hill of the king. I sleep in the woods to be close to the place, to hear its heartbeat because it's alive. And I make an offering of myself, asking for a miracle. Because if we don't get a miracle, we're going to lose that place. I'm worried about it being lost to the motorway. Rob interrupts. Does this offering include your ejaculate? Did you masturbate over Katie's body? He asks him where he was during the time of the murder. He says he was at a house party and then he went home. And then on the night that Katie's body was found, he was home. Rob asks, can you prove it? And Mark looks worried. Outside the interview room, Cassie says that basically what Mark was doing in the woods isn't so strange as they make this toast to the murder gods, which we saw them do at the end of episode one.
Because that's not strange.
Exactly. But she's kind of saying, like, we do that as well. Like, it's not weird to have your own gods, to have your own beliefs. We do that as well. But what Mark did is way weirder, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So the woman who's on the dig with Mark, I don't know her name. She's brought in and she gives Mark an alibi. She says she didn't say it originally that she was with Mark because she's married and she's a child, but she doesn't wear her wedding ring, basically.
So they were riding on stone.
No, not on the stone. In her house.
Steak on a stone.
Sorry. But why is there ejaculant on the stone?
There isn't ejaculant on the stone.
Oh, okay.
They were doing that thing where they tried to, where they were going to try and crack him by being as cruel and horrible as and evil. You know, they did like the girl who was sitting beside him.
I just wasn't sure. Yeah, I wasn't paying attention. I just was like, what is on that stone?
No, so they were basically being like, we're testing for everything. They haven't got the test back yet. And they were just trying to push him to see
if he'd basically break. He didn't murder Katie because he was riding the girl who's on the dig with them, who's married.
Exactly. Well, she's giving him this alibi.
She's saying that's where he was, yeah.
We're going to just have to believe that, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then we see a very cool shot of both interview rooms. So we actually see, I'm calling her dig woman. That's really disrespectful. I don't know her name. She leaves one interview room and you just see the other. It's basically a kind of a split screen, but it's just the way the police station is laid out. And you see him sitting in there in his own with one singular light coming down. So I feel like there's more to that story because they gave him this prominent shot. So Rob learns that Cahill Mills is due to land in Dublin. He's coming home from Berlin. Interrupted by a phone call from Simone. She was speaking to Jessica, who told her of a man that was speaking to Katie before she disappeared. So they basically go and see Simone about this. Katie was asked, did she want to see some kittens? Cassie asked Simone to get Rosalind to ask Jess to tell the story again in her own words. So they're all in the dance studio. Mm-hmm. Jess and Simone are dancing. Rosalind, Rob and Cassie are watching on. Jess retells the story. The man said to Katie, you're pretty, come with me, I've kittens. Jess wanted to see the kittens, but Katie told Jess they were going home. The man followed them. Katie told her to turn around. Then he wasn't behind them anymore and they went home. Jess said that he was wearing running clothes. Can you remember what running clothes? Asked Cassie. Blue, stupid. Katie's colour. They were blue.
Does anyone else, did you guys feel like that was a bit rehearsed or something? Or she'd been coached into saying that?
I don't know if it's just the way she talks,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
However, I think that they are different twins. So I think it is going to seem forced because she's trying to appear like her sister used to be.
Yeah.
If you get me. So I think one sister has learning difficulties, one doesn't, is what I've gathered.
Yeah.
This is the sister that doesn't have learning difficulties acting as if she does.
Yeah, I don't know what it was about that scene. I was just like, oh, this is just convenient now that the dad knows that there's a suspect and then all of a sudden they're telling them about this man who randomly went up to her. I don't know.
And this blue and pink thing is being pushed.
Yeah, the French blue tracksuit, the blue, pink, blue,
pink.
Blue, pink
coffin.
Yeah.
Do you remember their bedroom was actually one side of it is pink and super messy and the other side of it is blue and really, really neat? Like their beds are literally split in half. Mm-hmm. So this is a big thing and this will reveal all, I think. Later, Rob and Cassie tell Jonathan Devlin about the description that Jess gave and they leave. John looks his daughter up and down and says, you didn't tell me you were talking to them. Rosalind leaves the room to check on Mummy. John follows her to the end of the stairs and stops and looks super angry. Now, I shit myself.
Terrifying.
I didn't know what was going to happen. I thought it was going to get proper dark. Thankfully, it didn't. Sophie comes into the station. She has test results from Adam's clothes. Now, why the fuck wasn't this done in 1985? The blood is A negative. Peter and Jamie were O positive, but it can't be Adam's blood because he didn't suffer any blood loss or have a single injury. Now, maybe she's just... No, but she says test results. So these were only tested now. Maybe we didn't have that kind of... are we able to test like that in the 80s?
Yeah, I don't know.
You'd be surprised. DNA testing came in so late. I think it was in the early 90s. So maybe
you
weren't.
Yeah, you would know. You'd be able to know what blood type somebody is, yeah.
Well, it wasn't done, obviously. It's only being done now. She said, I've been doing this a long time and I've never seen a blade like the one used to cut this T-shirt. And I've never seen a situation where blood comes from nowhere. Then Rob says, the dickheads in the woods that she was referring to earlier on when she asked him to put more guard the patrol on her site. What noises were they making? Sophie. They were laughing. He shits himself. The camera pans the evidence board and stops on Cahill's photo. What?
Yeah. Just after you're like, he shits himself.
Shit himself. Yeah. Dead.
Yeah.
Then behind them, the camera pans and it stops on Cahill's photo. Cassie and Sam kiss in bed and she tells him that she thinks a lot of him too. He leaves for work. Cassie's phone rings. This was mad paro. I thought he was cheating on her, which was obviously what you think. Cassie's phone rings, waking her up. It's Sam's voice. He sounds really distressed. He's like, Cassie? And she's like, yeah, have you been in accidents? And he's like, oh no, it's just a pocket call. It's Grant. Hangs up, right? So weird. Until you obviously know that he's up there looking at her bleeding, dead, identical twin.
Yeah.
She falls back into a nightmare until she's woken by her phone again. It's Frank. He says, get up, get dressed. There's a car outside. Wear something that covers your head. Do it now. Alicia rings the guard, the information line for Katie Devlin. So it's obviously her voice that we heard at the start of the episode.
Yeah.
She says, thank you. You should be looking for Adam. Ask Adam what he did in the woods. Now, I'm sorry. you don't need some random woman to tell you to ask the only person involved in the whole thing
who's alive
and you haven't found. Hello. Meanwhile, Rob is in the evidence room. He's surrounded by evidence from 1985. He's sellotaping McCabe's shredded note back together.
Yeah.
Now, he told Quigley to get rid of that, but he obviously didn't mean it. Flashback to 1985. Both groups of friends are there. The older ones, the younger ones. Sandra says to Jamie, we've seen this scene before. You'll get all the boys in a few years, Jamie. What do you reckon, Cahill? Cahill leers at her and then says, jailbait. Jonathan calls him a pervert. The others laugh. Cahill looks Jamie up and down and she wipes her lipstick off. It's sick.
Yeah.
Back in the present, Rob stares at McCabe's letter and looks up as if he's realised something. He then cracks his neck and spots that handsome wolf and they lock eyes.
His neck is always sore every time he sees the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good
injury
point.
Is connected to whatever memory is coming through with that.
Yeah.
And whatever he realised reading McCabe's note made him think about the wolf and then brought back the neck injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember the blue rope as well.
Yeah, the power of your memory, how it manifests. You know, when you smell something, so many things come rushing back. It's like his injury is coming back.
Yeah,
when
there's
he...
certain aftershaves from drunken nights and you're like, whoo! Yeah. Can't.
I wonder, was he hung? Like, he obviously didn't die. But you know the blue rope is a thing.
Yeah.
He was hanged. If he's a neck injury, is that something? Or maybe
wasn't he found tied to the tree?
He wasn't tied to it. I thought
he was hugging
it.
He was holding
it.
Holding yeah, he was it. Hiding
oh,
behind it.
Very Dr. Hanley.
Yeah.
A black Jeep. Oh, back in the present. Oh, yeah, no, we've done that. A black Jeep with Cassie inside. It speeds past the He Rises sign. They drive past an ambulance and a guy in the car with loads of guardies standing around. The driver of the car tells her to put her hood up. He lets her out. She's in the ruined house the last time we saw Lexi. Crows are squawking. Sam is standing over a body with a coroner and Frank. Sam spots her and says, are you insane, Cassie? Don't. She pushes past him and looks down. It's her bloody identical twin that we thought was imaginary, Lexi. So creepy. Her eyes are open. Her nose is bleeding. She's got a wound to her abdomen and she is stone cold dead. That is end of episode 3.
Yeah.
Lots to take in.
Loads to take in. Sophie, I did a quick Google there.
Go on then.
So she's played by an actress called Shireen Martin.
Gorgeous name.
I've had a quick look through what she's been in. I don't know her from any of these, but wait till you hear her CV. Oh. All the iconic shows. Holby, yeah. The Bill, EastEnders and Doctors. And there's loads more as well.
If I was in Holby, The Bill, EastEnders and Doctors,
she's been
I'd
in
die
Vera
happy.
As well. I haven't seen that.
Brent and Vera's right up our
right
street.
Right up our street. Inspector Lewis... Yeah.
God, she's a great life.
But yeah, I really like her.
Just, same. Yeah.
I really like her too.
Mm.
And she's going to crack this. So she has the laughing thing.
Yeah.
And the blood thing.
Yeah.
They're two huge clues. Between her and Quigley. Although I was a bit disappointed in Quigley now.
Yeah.
How fast he shredded that note.
Mm.
But I think he's just so, he wants to impress Rob so
much. Or was
so
he
much.
Testing to see his reaction or something?
Yep.
Is Quigley playing dumb?
You think a lot of him, don't you?
I think Quigley could, I'm telling you, I think Quigley could be the underdog in cracking the case.
He's got that note photocopied and Rob's down there like a tick.
Yeah.
Taping it back together.
Taping it back together.
Oh, Quigley has them all stored. So yeah, thoughts?
I found that episode 3 quite confusing when I was watching it.
That's funny because I found 4 more confusing than 3.
You?
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'm about to make bits of this recap, but I feel like the net is still really wide and that I'm suspecting everyone of everything. And
I kind of like that though.
Oh, I'm like, just bring it in a little bit.
Do you think so? Like, I love that we're still at a point where we're like getting to talk about this and solve it and it's not served up to us. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's so obvious. Do you
yeah,
know
no,
I mean?
I love that it's not served up, but I'm very confused.
Yeah.
I think I'm a little bit more confused than I'd like to be.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm at a happy level of confusion.
I think since episode 4, I'm a little bit happier.
It's kind of hard to differentiate between the episodes, isn't it? Like,
when
I
you're
kept
getting
saying
two
last
shoved
week,
at Joey.
And I'm like, I don't know if I'm talking about one or two.
Yeah.
I can't remember how long we've had this piece of information or whatever. Okay, I'm really looking forward to your one, Brendan, because once again, this was on 25 to 11.
Oh, 20 to 11 last night.
20 to 11.
Oh yeah, shove it. Even
oh,
5 minutes later.
The Northern Irish News for 15 minutes last night. I can tell you everything going on up there. There's great stuff going on up there. Don't get me wrong. Didn't need to hear it last night. There you go.
Shout out to Donna Trainer.
Yes. Yeah. 20 to 11. It's so late.
Mm.
So I need this.
Okay.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So episode 4 of Dublin Murders, it opens with a car crash in the McGillicuddy Reeks.
Oh, I haven't heard that name. Is this geography?
Yes! That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, I was like, is that a real place? Like,
it will forever remind me of Miss Mangan.
Oh my God, we had a Miss King. Yeah. And she was once nearly shot at in Kenya.
Are they a brilliant...
Sorry, what?
My geography teacher had brilliant stories. And
got
I love geography.
Shot at in Kenya?
Yeah, or somewhere in Africa. They're not all the same countries, don't get me wrong, but she had been to so many places. And we used to go into class and I'd be sitting there with one of the girls and we'd be like, well, we try and get a story out of her today, you know, and you didn't want to do any work. And we'd be like, Miss, tell us a story about one of your travels, one of your adventures. She had the best stories. And she'd be like, no, girls, today we're doing work. This is sixth year. You've got the leaving cert in 2 months. And we'd be like, oh, Miss, go on. She's like, fine. I was once shot at in Kenny. We're like, oh, tell us more.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's a brilliant teacher.
Are the McGillicuddy Reeks Fold Mountains?
I can't remember.
That's just where the memory's coming from. You know, when you do junior cert geography and they're like, Fold Mountains. Do you know what I mean?
No.
My geography teacher was American, so that's what happened there. But the memory is like McGillicuddy Reeks, Fold Mountains, geography, let's go.
I remember the stalactites and the stalagmites.
Yeah, holding on
tight. The tights go down and the mites go up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, holding on tight.
Anyway, we're in the McGillicuddy Reeks. It's 1983 and it opens with a car crash. A little girl gets out and cries after her mom and dad, who we assume have been killed in the car. A young Lexi walks up to a young Cassie and says, they're dead, but you've got me, really coldly. And I'd just put an asterisk beside that. She kind of appears out of nowhere wearing identical clothes. They're both in like yellow raincoats. Who is she and where did she come from?
Very Stephen King.
Yeah. Fast forward to 2003 and Cassie in full Garda uniform for the first time, which we've never seen her in before. She visits Frank in some sort of a hideout. Frank tells Cassie that she needs to go undercover to find pretty boy Vincent Johnston. He's into drugs, guns, launders money, all that kind of sexy stuff. Frank doesn't exactly appear legit in the way that he carries himself, though. It's like
Frank is my favourite character.
Yeah, like, what are you at? Are you running your own undercover operation?
Don't know
or,
what he's at.
Yeah, I don't feel like he's really
there's a very thin line between him and breaking the law and being above board, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. His office slash home in an abandoned warehouse.
Yeah. So Cassie tells Frank that she wants to work on murder. He says that if she gets this job done with Johnston and manages to stay alive, that he'll help her get a job on murder. She says her undercover alias will be Alexandra, but says she calls herself Lexi. She answered this far too quickly, had a backstory ready to go. To the present day, and we're back up in the old ruin in the forest where Lexi's body's been found. The student card identifies her as Alexandra Mangan. Obviously, she looks identical to Cassie because they're played by the same actress. Cassie says that she doesn't have a twin. She's like, it's just me. It's only me. Forensics say Lexi was killed by a single stab wound to the heart. Now, remember, Cassie has a scar near her heart from where she was stabbed before. She showed Frank in the kitchen. She survived. obviously. Frank says Johnston called this in from prison. He then asks Cassie to leave when the paramedics arrive so as not to confuse them. Sends Sam, the boyfriend, off with her to look after her. Rob phones Cassie from her flat. She tells him about the new body and she too thinks the death is to do with Johnston. Thinks whoever did it meant to kill her and not this woman who looks like her twin that she made up. She says that the dead woman, yeah. She says the dead woman's got Lexi's name and looks just like me. Tells Rob not to come up to the ruins, but to go and chase down Cahill Mills. At this point, Sam tries to console Cassie, but she pushes him away. Frank asks Sam to go and question the students who knew Lexi to find out who killed her. Whoever Lexi was, she stole Cassie's undercover ID. Lexi was a student in Trinity. Frank tells Sam to lie to the other students and say that Lexi is still alive. So the woman who's dead in the ruins is not related to Cassie. She's not her twin. She's some completely random woman, we're led to believe, who has managed to rob an undercover ID of a guard.
I cannot wait to read the book.
Like,
to see how someone made sense of this.
It's
Rebecca's literally speechless.
Sorry, actually, I don't. I still
have nothing to bring.
I'm still trying
also,
to get
why
my
are
head
the students in Trinity all 35?
Yeah. Yeah.
And living in the middle of absolute nowhere. You're miles away from Trinity up there.
Yeah.
I can't get my head around it. I'm like, do they want us to think that she is her twin and that she just didn't know she had a twin and that she was instinctively thinking she had a twin her whole life, you know, and making her up and really she existed? I just have so many questions and we will get to some of the thoughts.
Can we please talk about that afterwards? I need to talk.
Yeah, just so confused
about that situation.
So Frank then makes a comment to Sam about his big swinging dick and Sam says, what if I don't want to do what I'm told? What if I don't give a fuck about your big swinging dick? He goes on his merry way with a little encouragement from Cassie, who just tells Sam like to move on. Rob calls to Cahill Mills' office, bursts into a board meeting, room full of people, and says that he needs to ask him some questions about Katie's murder in front of the room full of people.
Rob's unraveling.
Yeah. Cahill says that he has a flat in Berlin and explains that like why he flew there with just like a small weekend bag. He's like, oh, I've got a flat there, I've got stuff there, that's why. Rob says, you flew off very soon after Katie's death, and then questions why he didn't send his sympathies to her family, seeing as though Cahill knew Jonathan Devlin. Cahill says he didn't know Katie, but he knew her mother, Margaret. Rob says it's Margaret's testimony alone that puts him at the cinema the night that Jamie and Peter went missing in 1985.
Yeah, that saved them.
And hi, it's me, Adam. Cahill says he used to be friends with Jonathan Devlin, but claims they haven't fallen out. They're just, you know, not close anymore. Rob asks Cahill where he would find Shane. And I have here, is Shane Paintman? So I think...
Has to be. He's the last person left. Yeah. It is, definitely.
Then Rob implies that Cahill keeps fit and might have a tracksuit, French blue. He looks in the corner, he's like, oh, you've got a tracksuit there. And then asks him, it's just straight in, have you got porn on your laptop? And Cahill's like, well, yeah, of course I do. Like, you know, I think his words were a crack one out at the end of a busy day.
Gorge.
And
says
that he's like, yeah, just Rob says, what kind of stuff? And he's like, you know, just normal stuff. And then when Rob pushes him on it, Cahill says, big shaved dykes fisting arrogant Brits until they scream. And Rob's like, oh, that's niche. It's Reb is horrified.
This episode has me shook.
This episode was, it's proper weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rob, the way Rob asks him about the porn is so...
But he knows because he stood on front of your man's face when he was leering over Jamie, who had to have been 6 years younger than him.
Mm. Yeah, and then that word comes up now. He uses the word
a different thought about that, which we'll come to at the end.
Oh, yeah, okay. Because I'm struggling.
You have a different... I know, come here.
With people not recognising Rob.
So then Cahill then throws Rob out of his office when Rob suggests that he's into child porn.
He says jailbait, the exact line that he used in the woods in 1985.
Yeah. He says it to trigger him. Like, I'm like, you're playing
exactly,
with fire,
but
pal.
I'm like, how is he not going to look at him and go... Oh yeah, I know you said jailbait because I'm Adam. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, you're the image of him. Oh, we know he went to England. You have a weird English accent. No offense, let's be honest. Do you know
it's
what I mean?
Very close to the English
pages line up.
I've definitely got his name wrong. I've Fenton written down. Rev's favorite guard. What's his name?
Fenton.
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 Dr. Phelan.
Dr. Phelan.
It's Phelan. Just Gar the Phelan. Gar the
Phelan. Like feeling great.
Feeling Fenton, your cheekbones.
Jesus Christ, Fenton the dog.
Phelan, Robba's Phelan, just keep a watch on Cahill. Frank and Cassie head to prison to visit Johnston, but Cassie says when they get there, they pull up outside. She's like, I want to see him on my own. Johnston is a menacing presence, to say the least, sitting in a single chair, cuffed to the small desk. He asks Cassie if she's come to gloat. And then he says, you know what the worst thing is? I actually liked you. I really liked you, you sly little bitch. Obviously, Johnston is burned. The back in 2003, when Cassie befriended him, she was undercover and landed him in jail. I get the vibe, though, that she was really into him, though, as well.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Cassie says nothing, gets up, walks out, goes back to Frank, and straight away says to Frank, Johnston has nothing to do with murdering the woman who's up in the ruin, who is identical to me but not my twin. Damien, the fella who was only sweating to take part in an ID parade.
Oh, Damien, take a break.
Damien, chill out.
Take a day off. But you know what? Damien could be another one I'd put in the category of going to crack the whole thing. Damien's got info.
So he was dying to take part in an ID parade, but says he can't pick the French blue tracksuit man out of the faces that he's been shown.
We'd be dying to take part in it. Could you imagine? Even my phone got robbed. The suggestion of being asked to take part in
it. Can I tell the story? I'm sure I can. So my phone got robbed out of my hand in town like years ago, and the guards. A guy on a bike, basically. It's quite scary. A guy on a bike cycled past, took my phone out of my hand, right? And the guards were like, can you come into the station to look at a few photos? And I was like, can I what? I was watching How to Get Away with Murder at the time and I was obsessed.
So good.
Sitting in like a little interview suite.
And
like,
is there anything else you need, Garza?
They were like, we'll be in touch. They never called.
Guys, I saw witness to crime in town before. I won't get into any details. I was invited to give a statement to one of my friends in Pier Street and I was driven home by a Garda.
Were you?
Yeah, gave a full statement, driven home in a Garda car.
I had to give a full statement. It's
the best thing that ever happened.
And I was under 18. So I brought my sister along with me because my parents were away and we've never actually told them that I had to go to the guards and give them a statement, so they're going to find out now. But it was something that I happened to be somewhere where something happened one night. And it was Valentine's Day. And like after my interview, the guard was like to my sister, oh, like it's Valentine's Day. What are you doing tonight?
Stop
and I was
it.
Like, I have to leave.
But was the guard hot?
I mean,
did he go out with her?
What did your sister do?
My sister was just like, Rebecca, like, let's just go home. I'm meant to be minding you for the week.
I'll tell you one more quick story then, fine.
Go on.
There was a hit and run outside the house I stayed in, the Gaeltacht, very Knocknaree. And the ban on tea called the guards. Now, it was kind of like, no one was like terribly injured. It was like someone was knocked off their bike.
Oh,
like,
right,
it was
okay.
Awful. It was a bit awful, but no one was like run over on. And all of us 14-year-olds in the house had to give statements to the NRD, but my mum had to be rang and then she had to give permission over the phone and then we all gave statements. Well, we were the talk of the Gaeltacht then the next day.
The drama.
The scandal.
Trying to tell everyone
else
Gaeilge what was going on. We wouldn't get caught and put into detention.
A line of duty interrogation. Also screaming at your use of the NRD.
You lads are your Garda Síochána.
Say it again, please.
Garda Síochána.
You should be on TG Car. Okay, so Damien can't pick out the French blue tracksuit man from all the faces that Quigley's been showing him. Rob tells Quigley to give Damien a break and then show him a photo of Cahill. He's like sweating to know. Rob tells O'Kelly that Cahill liked underage girls and maybe it wasn't Jonathan Devlin after all.
Do we think it was?
I think Cahill did like underage girls, yeah.
But we've been shown that he does.
Yeah.
Did we not think that Jonathan Devlin liked underage girls?
Did we?
No, we think he could. There's some sort of abuse going on in the house, I think.
So it's always
been
Cahill.
Weird at the bottom of the stairs.
There's an abuse.
Episode.
There's some sort of situation going on there.
We don't know if it's sexual or not.
Right. Rob also tells O'Kelly that the newly murdered woman had been using Cassie's undercover identity. Post-mortem on Lexi. The wound, similar to the one that Cassie got, but survived. Cassie survived because the blade snagged on her ribs, which sounds so painful.
I just thought of something there. Can I just interrupt real quick? Frank wasn't surprised by Cassie's twin.
No, he wasn't.
Sam was having a meltdown.
Yeah, Frank wasn't.
Wasn't.
How did she get her hands on an undercover ID?
Because he knew about her.
Yeah.
He found her.
Also, did you notice in her post-mortem that there's a tattoo on her wrist that's a circle?
No. Sorry, this is another thing you've noticed.
Yeah, I think I just like you know, kind of tattoos that have like a nice outline.
No,
you know,
you're picking up on things.
But
the
I
belt.
Saw a tattoo on her thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll put that down in our clues.
Yeah. So the pathologist says with dead Lexi that there's no criminal record, no medical history. Fingerprints come up with nothing. O'Kelly bursts in mid-post-mortem results and has a scrap with Frank over the dead body about how she could possibly steal Cassie's undercover student identity.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
At one point, O'Kelly is shouting so loud that Frank says, "Going a bit red in the face there, Brian. Careful you don't have a stroke." And in his best Bishop Brennan, O'Kelly goes, "Don't you Brian me, you little arsehole."
Frank done this. Frank yeah. found her.
Yeah. The pathologist jumps in to split them up with the shocking news that Lexi was 3 months pregnant. We are going to know who that baby daddy is.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
But it's obviously someone we know.
Yeah, definitely. So now we have a flashback back to 1983, kind of after the car crash where Cassie's parents died. And it's like obviously a young Cassie, and who I'm going to say is her aunt.
Yeah, I'm presuming it's the
aunt. It's her aunt, and the aunt has the priest call over to the house, sends Cassie up to her room, and Lexi, and I have in here brackets, who I now think is imaginary, rips wallpaper off the wall and the curtains off the rail while Cassie stands there and looks shocked but impressed by her actions. Back to the present day, Cassie takes a pregnancy test. She's not pregnant. Puts it in the kitchen bin where it's definitely going to be found later on.
Yes. Frank's going to find it when he's snooping around her apartment.
Yeah.
But also to feel that, that's what makes me think that she always knew she had a twin, because she feels like they're connected and she's checking if she's pregnant.
Yeah. Or she's confused.
That like, was weird.
Did
that
I,
was weird.
Did I make her up? Am I her? Yeah. Like to...
She's as confused as we are.
Do you know
now?
The way twins feel each other? You know what they say, that twins, some twins can telepathically communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are like, "I knew something was wrong with my twin because I got this terrible feeling in the middle of the night."
Obsessed with stories like that.
Yeah, I just feel like there's definitely some sort of connection that she probably has always felt. We'll get to some more of that.
Well, she
later
did.
On.
I think at that point she was like, so she was speaking to someone called Lexi that she thought to be real as a child. That's a fact.
Yeah.
She grew up and then was like, that was an imaginary friend.
Yeah.
But now her identical twin, Lexi, is here and pregnant. So she's like, I thought at that moment when she's taking the pregnancy test, she's like, maybe I never imagined her at all. Maybe she was real the whole time. It was hidden from me.
Hmm.
I
don't know.
Yeah, so
I don't know.
So pregnancy test in the bin. Frank rings the doorbell and asks Cassie to pretend to be Lexi, who is very much dead. He wants her housemates to come and see her in hospital. So Cassie gets hooked up to life support, pretending to be the nearly dead woman who is actually dead, who stole her undercover identity.
Now, guys, that's when are you gone still full with bonkers. Me? Like, it's 11:30. I'm like, I'm in a dream state.
Yeah,
this is like Days of Our Lives.
It's gone mad.
Yeah, it is.
But like in a great way. Like I'm loving it because I know that it's going to tie up nicely. But at this point now in the hospital,
yep.
with Lexi, fake Lexi in the bed.
And how does Frank even think of that? Like, Frank is mad. How did he even
Frank
go
is the puppet
away?
Master.
And yeah. 35-year-old Trinity students bawling, crying. No.
So weird. Frank is watching Lexi's college mates like a hawk for any clues of who killed her. Ask them to help him find her family. They say they don't know her family, that they never pushed her for details, as she found it distressing. They tell her. They tell Frank that they're her family. The students leave and Cassie makes a miraculous recovery. Frank tells Cassie that he thinks Lexi should make more of a recovery and tells her to go live as Lexi with her fellow students. Frank then lets slip that he's really been watching Cassie closely, says Sam is a fool for not seeing that Rob is her weak point. So at this point, she's fucking...
Is there no concern for her mental health? She has just found out she has a twin. The twin's dead. The twin was pregnant. Now you're going to go and live her life.
Go and pretend to be your dead twin, yeah.
Who was using your ID that you created based off your own imaginary childhood twin. And there seems to be no regard for her mental state whatsoever.
And also so weird that Frank says that all of the students own that house. So Lexi owns a fifth of that house.
Yeah.
I thought that was so weird.
Frank then tells Cassie that she's only happy pretending when she's somebody else. So suitably upset, Cassie tells Frank she's cooking Sam dinner tonight and is then going to throw him on the bed, tells Frank to enjoy his microwave burger and lonely wank.
I like that.
Rob turns up at the ballet school looking for Simone, the teacher. Rosalind and Jess are sitting on the steps outside. Rosalind, upset that Katie never told her she was being followed by the man in the French blue tracksuit who wanted to show her his kittens, asks why Rob is in Ireland. He says that his dad was from Donegal but died. Kind of just gives a very brief answer and then moves on. Jonathan Devlin turns up to bring his daughters home from the ballet school, tells Rob that it's not appropriate for him to talk to his daughters without his permission. Rob then shows Jonathan a photo of Cahill and asks him if he'd like to amend any of his statements from 1985. He doesn't. He gets in the car, leaves. You're one with the hoopy earrings from episode one, whose fella murdered the man in the
garage.
Couldn't
tell your name. Yeah. God,
her name is Alana, and I only know it from later on, right?
This was horrific.
Yeah. So
Jesus,
she gets
it was?
Yeah,
what's
she
that?
Gets jumped in the street by two girls with a pair of scissors.
On Talbot Street.
On Talbot Street, yeah, outside the Spar.
Shout out Spar.
Back at the Devlin house, and Jonathan tells Rosalind to pack for a family trip, says he doesn't know if they're ever coming back. She flips at her dad for having to look after Jess and her mother and asks him who he's been having sneaky phone calls with. He roars at her to do as she's told.
Because he's sending them off without him.
Yeah.
That's why she flips. Because okay. She's like, I have to look after Jess and mummy yeah. on my own. Which is...
Who was he on the phone to? The ballet teacher?
Cahill? I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Oh, I thought he was ringing Cahill to arrange their meetup.
Yeah.
I thought so too.
Rob again asks Quigley to show Damien the photo of Cahill. Says to scrape his hair back in the photo this time. I don't know. Flashback to the forest in 1985. Adam is watching one of the older guys and we hear the words jailbait and pervert being whispered. Now,
yeah.
Could I give you maybe a half-baked theory here?
Yes.
I think...
Living first.
Instead of it being... Was it Jamie that we're assuming they might have like interfered with?
Potentially.
Yeah. Well, he fancied
I think...
It was Rob.
Adam.
Yeah.
I think it was
maybe.
Adam.
Well, at the end of this episode...
Yeah, I think that would explain why.
You saw him mouth. Shane mouths to Rob, go now.
Yeah.
As in, I think they were
looking. I think they were looking at Adam, not Jamie.
But he looks at Adam and goes, go now. As in, get out of here, he's after you.
Yeah,
or you
I
need to get
so.
Out of here, he's gonna do something to your Ooh. Underage friend. It's horrific. But Shane...
Yeah.
And Shane's the one who's having the most trouble with what happened in 1985. Yeah.
Shane is... fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This has messed up his entire life.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Because he probably
Guilt.
Couldn't stop it. Yeah. He's like, yeah. I Guilt. Knew what was happening and I couldn't stop it.
So Jonathan Devlin, don't know what's going on there. He's messed up his whole family's life. Shane, his life's in tatters. Cahill doesn't seem to have
sociopath.
Been affected by
yeah.
this, whatever.
Sociopath. No empathy.
Yeah, yeah exactly.
Yeah.
Back in Cassie's gaff, she's glugging the red wine while making dinner for Sam. Sam's asking a lot of questions about Lexi and he's like, she has to be a real woman. Cassie's super tetchy, says that she made Lexi up and she's like, and now here she is. Sam says Cassie didn't make her up. She then says to Sam that he's a very busy family calendar with birthdays, etc. He says his mother reminds him of all the occasions. She then very weirdly goes, what do you do when your mother dies? And he looks really stunned. He's like, what? Where did that come from?
Well, that's how we feel.
Yeah. Like, what?
I think it's because she never had any family. So she's like, yeah. Oh, look at you, like in a jealous way. Oh, look at you, all your family events. Your mum does all that. I've no family.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing that really horrible thing where when you're like in a relationship, you can say the most horrible fights, like say the meanest things you'd never say to anyone else.
Yeah.
Even if you love someone.
Back in hospital, Alana, the one with the hoops, says that Kian's family attacked her because she grassed on him. So Kian's her boyfriend who murdered the guy in the garage. He's gone to prison for the garage murder. They've cut, like, she looks horrendous. God love her. They've cut all of her hair off with the scissors. They've beaten the shit out of her. But then somebody says, but the baby's okay. So she's pregnant?
We knew she was pregnant.
Yeah. Okay,
big
yeah.
huge bump.
Yeah. Big huge bump. Missed that. Alana demands that Cassie protects her or she'll tell how you let Detective Riley say I was lower than shit so I'd grass. Tells Cassie that she won't trust her until she puts her in emergency accommodation. Sam is pissed off that Cassie let Rob talk to Alana like that in the first episode in the interview room to force her to confess. Cassie argues that it meant that they found out who killed the garage guy. Sam storms off, tells Cassie she can go and get a cab instead. Cassie follows him over to his car to tell him that she used to fuck Johnson, in her words, when she was undercover. That's how she knows.
Johnson is the guy
is
that
the guy
was
who's in prison.
She,
yeah. So okay. At the start of this episode, Frank asks her to go undercover to get this guy. Yeah, so he's in prison.
And in the very first episode, wasn't that the court case? And Frank was like lurking at the very top, and it was Johnson and Corson.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay,
So it was just showing that's how they met her and how they knew each other.
So she says, yeah, you really get to know a man when he's inside you. Quite enjoyed it, if I'm honest. Anyway, sleep tight.
She's
so she really tried to hurt him,
And like, he didn't
away, I think, because she just knows that the Lexi thing is all.
And he was about to say, I love you.
Yeah.
She's just on a mad one.
We have another flashback to who I'm assuming is Cassie's aunt, looking at the state of the now trashed bedroom. Child Cassie just turns to her and says, Lexi did it.
Has anyone seen Split with James McAvoy?
Yes.
Movie. This made me think of that. That wasn't me. That was Patricia.
Such a good movie. Back in hospital with Alana, Cassie tells Rob that she's had such a shit day. She tells Rob that she told Sam about her and Johnson, says she was angry and wanted to shock him, and she just keeps repeating, today's been really shit. It's been a really shit day, a really shit day, a really shit day. Feeling with the cheekbones interrupts by phoning Rob to tell him that Cahill's on the move. It's nighttime and he is driving to Knocknaree. Jonathan Devlin already up there standing in front of a car that looks like it's crashed, or maybe the door was just open. It looks like the side of the car is gone.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah. I'm like, what was what,
I
what
think the door was
there?
Just open, but it was.
Maybe, yeah. Jonathan Cahill have a standoff in the middle of the road. Jonathan flips and keeps roaring at Cahill that his daughter was killed, and then he gives him a punch and calls like, you broke me fucking nose.
I hate Cahill with every fibre of my being.
And then Jonathan keeps saying that my daughter was killed, my daughter was killed, my daughter was killed. And then Cahill goes, it was Shane. Did I hear that wrong?
Oh, I completely missed that.
I've watched this episode twice. I could have heard it wrong.
No, I don't think he did. I'm sure it was just kind of one of those moments that it was like probably muttered, or like, you know, he was also on the ground after being punched.
And if I did hear it correctly, I didn't believe him. It's like Cahill blaming Shane.
Cahill hates Shane. Yeah. He thinks he's a drug addict scumbag.
Well, he thinks he's the one most likely to
crack. He was the weak link in this case.
Yeah, is that why he's worried? Yeah.
Yeah. Jonathan asked Cahill if he thought they were going to be able to live normal lives without there being a reckoning. There's that word again.
Oh my god, that was harmonized, guys.
Guys.
Cahill says he managed to get out of this place and won't let Shane or anyone else drag him back. Now, Rob and Cassie are in a ditch listening to the whole thing. Really, really close.
The way the kids used to listen.
To the way the kids,
Jonathan definitely looks right at them.
Okay, I'm watching this as soon as I get home again because I missed that.
So Jonathan and Cahill finish their exchange.
No.
Cahill fucks off. The camera cuts to Rob and Cassie in the ditch watching, and Jonathan Devlin turns and looks at them.
Oh, so God.
He knows they were there, I think.
Maybe Rob asked Jonathan to meet up with Cahill. Like he knew that they were there?
I wonder. But I think that Jonathan knew they were there. And that I feel like he was kind of working on their behalf or something, trying to get something out of...
Okay, I haven't noticed that, but I think he's working on their behalf. If
I completely missed it.
Totally missed
like
it.
Like a tit.
And again,
sandwich.
I may be making all of that up. Back in the car, they're heading back down from Knocknaree. Rob and Cassie are in the car. Rob says that they now have to find Shane, who we think is Paint Man, to find out what happened to Jamie and Peter. And he says, hopefully Katie. Driving down the dark road, there's a thump off the car. Cassie asks Rob what it was. Rob stops and gets out of the car, leaving Cassie sitting in the passenger seat. This scene I found so freaky. Mm-hmm. It just stayed too quiet for too long. And if it was line of duty, they definitely would have shoehorned another ambush in there. Just, you know, cause.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it felt like it was going to be an ambush scene. Definitely.
What is the scene you always say, Brendan, when you're like...
Oh, yeah. Season 5, episode 3.
An ambush.
An ambush. Happened to us in a restaurant recently. We were ambushed. Flashback to Cassie in the car with her parents the night of the crash. They're having a family sing-along to Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick when they do indeed hit a deer standing in the middle of the road.
The fucking... That deer.
The CGI.
Oh.
was it a bit gammy?
Just the way you see her reflection in the deer's eye.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
So here we see more of the crash than we did at the start of the episode, and again see Cassie meeting Lexi for the first time. I felt like there was a similarity to the way that Lexi coldly says they're dead and how Jess said Katie is dead in the first episode.
Yeah.
There was a very similar
great spot.
So it's twins and just the way it's delivered. Yeah.
Fetches.
Back to the present day, and it was a fox that Rob hit on the road. He lies to Cassie, though, and says, oh, it was nothing. I don't know what it was. I can't see anything. It's all a bit much for Cassie, and she bursts into tears. She's had a day of it. Then
he knows how her parents died as well, so that's why he's
just not trying to bring it all back to her. Yeah.
Then Cassie and Rob kiss. I seem to be the only one shocked by this.
No, I was like, let's go.
I wasn't shocked after what Frank said. He was like, how does your man not see that he's your weak point and blah, blah, blah.
I missed him saying that on my first watch. I only caught that the second time. Why I was shocked.
Hang on, Frank fucking knows everything.
Frank knows everything.
So Rob and Cassie kiss. Then they stop for a second and they're a bit like, oh, should we? And then they go at it more.
It's on.
Beside the dead fox. The next scene is the next morning. Rob gets out of Cassie's bed and gets dressed. A mini flashback kind of scenes then of like stuff we've already seen, but now we look at with different eyes, shows Rob clearly in love with Cassie, but terrified.
I thought that was so cute.
Yeah, so like the looks he gives her, like when they had the sandwiches with the red and the brown sauce, and then in the cafe when his mom leaves.
He came over after the neck thing.
Yeah. Cassie arrives into work. Quigley says that Damien has shied off today and won't be into ID anyone.
It's like Damien's been in every day of the
bloody
week.
Damien is like
another staff member.
He's a brilliant character.
He is.
But he's like, he's dying to help so much, but he hasn't. Do you know what? He's dying to help so much, hasn't helped yet.
Yeah, but just remember when he started crying when he was trying to ID all the suspects? Like, I know it's awful what some of those people have done, but he just started crying, guys. Like,
guys,
this is
Damien, Quigley, and Frank, they have this.
Yeah.
And Sophie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those
love Sophie.
Four, they have it.
Quigley's listened to more of those voicemails that have been left on the Garda line. Here's one from Jamie's mother, I think.
Alicia,
thank you. Asking them to find Adam and ask Adam what happened in the woods.
We heard her recording that in episode 3.
Back down to the archives, Rob tells Cassie that them sleeping together was nothing. Quite cruelly tells her that crying girls make me hard. That's it, that's all.
Oh,
guys, that was stone cold, Steve Austin.
I felt like that was being said to me.
Then tells
I was
her.
Raging. And sorry, can we just say that the reason he said that is because she kind of went down and just touched him on
the
arm.
She touched the shoulder,
If they hadn't even rode each other, that we wouldn't have thought twice about that touch.
Yeah.
And he nearly jumped out of his own skin and then comes back at her with the cruelest thing you could ever say to someone, let alone your mate.
He did what she did to O'Neill the day before, basically.
And it's why they're meant to be together, because they literally are the same person.
If that wasn't like cruel enough, Rob then turns around to Cassie and says, if it makes you feel any better, you can tell yourself Lexi did it. She then slaps him around and says, fuck you.
Oh, and she goes for it.
I wanted to slap him around for it.
Same.
Another flashback to the wallpaper pulled off the walls in Cassie's child bedroom. The aunt screaming, there is no Lexi, there's just you. Cassie says, I know, I know, I know. Episode finishes with Cassie calling to Frank, who still hides out in the same place since 2003, and tells him that she is totally on for pretending to be Lexi again.
So sorry for a second. There's that timeline when she first went undercover and we saw her in a Garda uniform is
2003.
So we've 1985.
1983 was the car crash where her parents were killed.
1985 was the missing.
Yeah.
2003, Garda.
Yeah.
Cassie.
Yeah. And then 2006 is the current.
Right.
Day.
Okay.
So.
I don't know what to believe.
What have you taken away from? What was your.
I mean, guys, it was a serious 2 episodes. Like, now it feels like it's nothing to do with Katie's murder at all. Now it's all about, is Lexi real? Who is Lexi before she was Lexi? And it's all that storyline now.
I do think that I'm onto something with Adam being the one that the older teenagers were after.
I think you're onto something as well. And, you said
and it
too,
would
Rob.
Explain. It would explain him not wanting. Do you remember with the housemate with the toe separators?
Yeah.
And she was just like, he was like, yeah, this is just sex, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He can't. It doesn't want to emotionally connect with anyone. But I think he's really in love with Cassie, but is terrified.
She's the only one who knows the real him.
Also, and when did Cassie and Rob first meet? Where did she come into his life?
That is something that we haven't touched on yet. Like, I think we're meant to presume that when she got moved to murder, that he was already on the squad. I don't think so.
Also, and again, may have misheard it. When Rob's, so they were in the cafe, Rob, his mother and Cassie.
Yeah.
Cassie walked Rob's mother out of the car and came back in. Yeah. When she sat back down, did she say something to him along the lines of... along the lines of, we were the only two to get out alive.
Yeah, she did say that, but is that to deal with that in her situation, she got out alive in the car crash, in his situation, he got alive out of the woods? Yeah. It could be that,
but totally.
I do think that they met before and there's way more to their relationship.
Cassie walks Adam's slash Rob's mum out to the car park, right? No reason for this scene that we know of yet, but I think it's a clue. The mum, I can't remember her name, turns to Cassie and said, you're a really good liar. And then Cassie comes back in, sits down in front of Rob and goes, your mum just said I was a really good liar. And they're both like...
I thought she said he was a terrible liar.
Hold on, no, I have it written down here.
There's something like that. But didn't she say something like, oh, I make Adam so angry.
You're such a bad liar.
And Cassie goes, no, you don't make him angry or you don't annoy him.
That's what it was. And then she goes to Rob, your mom's after saying I'm a bad liar. And it could just be like, oh, well, I went undercover and cracked this unreal case and I have a body double. But the way they laughed about it and the way they showed that scene, I was like, there's something in that.
Something dodgy. Okay, so I have a couple of thoughts and theories that I've gathered from the internet, emails we got in and just my ramblings. Guys, this is literally a soliloquy, this whole situation.
For it.
So thoughts or theories number one. Who was Lexi? Okay, so we know that Cassie had the imaginary friend and she used it to help her deal with the death of her parents. Obviously we know like that she's pregnant and that she looks so like Cassie that they could be twins, that basically they are. Do we think they're twins?
Who's she pregnant with?
I don't know.
They're twins.
Now Cassie, we see in a preview for next week's episode that she's getting her hair cut, like she's getting the bangs in. She is
she's gonna go
undercover. She's gonna go live in that house with the other four students. Next week hopefully we're gonna find out who Lexi was before she was Lexi. Because how do you get your hands on somebody's ID who was undercover in 3 years before?
I think Frank had to have given it to her.
He's
a puppet master here.
And you made a really good point that he was the only one that wasn't surprised. Like, he wasn't shocked.
He was nearly smirking. It was so weird.
Also, we'll find out if she was in fact killed in a case of mistaken identity or if Lexi herself had some dodgy dealings in her life.
I think the father of the child will tell us how long these two have been connected. As in, like, could the father of the child be Johnson, say? Like, they're literally riding the same person.
She's 3 months pregnant.
Like, could it be Sam? Could it be... Do you know what I mean? I think the father of the child is someone in Cassie's life.
Yeah, that's a very big possibility. Also, who was in episode 3 Lexi ringing when she was running around the ruins of the old farmhouse? Okay, who was she ringing? Because she kept trying to call a phone, and your man's phone kept ringing. But then the detectives were also ringing a phone.
Frank.
Oh, so your man that was going up in the lift. Who? I was like, if you don't answer it, put it on fucking silent.
But two people were ringing him at once, so it doesn't add up. Do you know what I mean? The detectives were ringing him, and then Lexi the with the fringe was actually ringing someone as well at the same time.
Yeah, unless that was the connection that they were trying to show us. Like, okay, the phone is ringing, it's him, and then his phone is still ringing, but it's her now on the other end of it. Unless they were trying to...
Well, they were in the car together when Fran walked
out.
They
know each other.
Who's he as well? Who's Fran's character?
Who is Fran?
What's
he's
he doing
rat in the pub?
Yeah. Also, when she answered her... So when she was ringing someone in the ruins, her phone rang then, and it was someone called Daniel, and she goes, I'm coming home now. So there's Daniel is probably the baby daddy.
Glenn Skehy is where the pub was, where Lexi's ruins was, where the house of Trinity students is, Glen Skehy. The reason that Sam was sent there by Rob is because they were looking at where the motorway is going to come from and to. And Glen Skehy was the only part that the motorway was due to go through that didn't really make any
sense. He kept saying it.
They
were Sam
like, what the fuck is up there? So Rob was like, I don't know what's up there. I don't know why they try and put the road through there. So can you just go up and see if anyone knows anything about the phone calls or tracksuit man?
And do we think that the students that Lexi went to live with have more to do with stuff?
Absolutely. They had the house party, I think.
Did either of you guys
that they were
read?
All at, you know, this mysterious house party? I think it was in the students' house.
Okay. Oh my god, that Dr. Hanley was at.
Yeah, I think that the students, the house party, this is all really dodgy. But I do think that Lexi is with someone called Daniel, and she rang him and told him she was coming home, and she never came home.
When Lexi made that phone call,
her phone rang. Yeah,
that was in 2006 timeline.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, that was present day. She was up the mountains, and then someone got her before she got to go home and killed her.
Ah.
Very weird. Okay, next theory. Is Dublin Murders actually a supernatural drama? Okay.
I'm not here for that.
I know we touched on this last week and myself and Hannah are mad into the mystical shit, but a woman called Emmy Griffiths wrote an article for HelloMagazine.com and she raises some excellent points.
Hello.
So these are the points all pointing to the supernatural theme. Jamie's mum accuses Adam of being a changeling, which, according to folklore, is a fairy child left in the place of a human child that was taken by fairies.
It's Angelina Jolie in that film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Also, Katie's sister Jessica is described as a fetch, which in Irish folklore is a supernatural double.
Stop trying to make fetch.
Stop trying to make... You got there before me.
You're my supernatural double, Brett.
We see that theme again, obviously, that Cassie has basically an identical twin that isn't her twin that we don't know is her twin. So that whole theme.
That makes my brain
If that
hurt.
Turns out not to be your twin.
Also, guys, remember what I was saying earlier about how twins can telepathically connect with each other sometimes?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's always talked about. I don't know if it's true. I'm not a twin, so I'm not sure. I noticed in the scene that when Cassie was in bed after O'Neill left her house in the middle of the night, after he said he pocket dialed her, she falls back asleep, but there's these snippets of the trees above.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I kept thinking when I rewatched it, oh my God, she's getting a vision of Lexi's
being
last
killed.
Moments.
Sorry.
Did anyone notice that?
Well, now that you've said it.
Well, I said that she was having a nightmare.
But
and
it was
I
the
presumed.
Exact trees. It was like, it was like she was almost sitting down. It's like she was having a vision of sitting down, looking up, and your one was found literally sitting down like that. So I was like, oh my God, she's having some sort of vision.
Like a premonition sort
of what Lexi's final last sight moments were.
They have to be twins then.
Yeah, that's why I think they're twins.
I think they're twins. I loved seeing the other side of Sam's phone call, because what was clearly happening on the other side of that phone was he's on Murder Squad. He's called out to a murder.
Yeah.
It's his fucking girlfriend, with a full fringe and different clothes. He's got a little baby bump and he's like, Cassie? And she's like, yeah, I just woke up. He's like, yeah, okay. No,
he's like, sorry, my pocket.
He's
like,
oh, no. How weird must that have been
the
for him?
The fella was having an absolute meltdown.
He's the only one who reacted. Everyone else is like, oh, there's some girl.
And that's why I think that phone call was, like, it makes total sense and I love it. It's so mysterious. But it was put in there, I think, to counteract the complete non-reaction from Frank.
Yeah.
Why wasn't he ringing her? She's his prize gal. He knows about Lexi. He said it all.
Yep.
Also, the whole situation with the wolf, with Robin Adam, is like getting to me now. Why is that wolf in? What's going on with that?
One more thing on Frank and Lexi, I apologise, but when he went over to her apartment to say your birth cert has been activated, I have a Google search on you, he was looking at her eyes to go, your one's active, and I'm basically checking in with you to see
if you know.
It's like what Mycroft used to do with Sherlock, with the dog, basically. That's what it is.
But it's basically
he's
like, that was activated.
I think
he just goes, he's just checking. He's like, brilliant. I actually haven't activated myself. So, grand, you don't know about it.
Exactly.
Very good point. The wolf situation, I looked this up online as well. I went full detective psychic here, right? It symbolizes guardianship, ritual, loyalty, and spirit. It's a symbol of strength and courage in mythology, as well as freedom and wisdom. And the wolf often appears to guide your journey of self-discovery.
Did you get that off your angel cards?
I mean, I
love that you looked that up.
I just, because I kept being like, there's all these symbols. What are we missing with the wolf? So it's all self-discovery, right? It could be nothing to do with the guys.
Which means he potentially doesn't remember what happened in the woods. Not that he's lying to us, that he can't remember.
Also, Adam's yellow t-shirt, guys.
Yeah.
Do you know the way the lady we love?
Sophie,
yeah.
So Sophie says that she's never seen a blade that has a left-handed curve. Is that a claw? Is it a wolf's claw? Am I going mad?
But then how was there no blood on him? How was he not? He had no injury.
I don't know. It's just so weird. I just kind
of
went.
Came out of your mouth. I'm like, she has three big holes in the back. I never thought
it
of a
looks,
wolf's
looks
claw.
Like a claw. I just don't get it. Is he associating a wolf with someone, with some evil, and he can't put a face to it, so it's manifesting as an animal? I don't know.
Yeah, good point. It looks like, you know, in Beauty and the Beast, when the Beast drags his claw across the picture of him when he used to be the prince. That's exactly, it looks fake.
It's just the way he said it was curved. Your hand curves, a claw curves.
And she made
it was
a
so
point
weird.
Of saying, I've never seen a blade like this in my 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
So weird. Also, the evidence showed that Katie was carried into the woods after her death, and implying that she would have been placed on the altar So that's another kind of supernatural element.
We haven't actually thought about where she could have potentially been killed then. Ballet school. Like, yeah. It's going to be somewhere that we know.
Yeah.
The house party.
The house rooms. According to Digital Spy, Sarah Phelps revealed that she was inspired by a real life story that she saw on Country File. Okay?
Country File?
On Country File. So that's
Jesus, maybe I should start watching Country File.
Maybe we all should.
So that show was filming in Northern Ireland, and in the particular episode they interviewed a man who was protesting against a motorway, and he said that he was protesting because it would have meant that a hawthorn tree was going to be destroyed, okay? So Phelps described the tree as magic and said that the man's argument had centered on the belief that if you cut down the tree, everything will be disrupted because you cannot upset the fates.
Well, hawthorn trees are meant to be magic.
So Sarah says what drew her to the story was that he won because at some deep level, every person must have woken up and thought, oh my God, what if he's right? What if you cut down the tree and all hell breaks loose? So that's interesting. That makes me think that, do you know the way they keep being like, they were laughing at us. I'm like, are the trees alive? Are the trees laughing at them? Mm-hmm. Are the woods alive? Have I lost the plot?
And the book is called Into the Woods, isn't it?
Into the Woods.
So
and
it could go a bit supernatural.
The likeness, which is making a lot of sense.
Are
now.
The trees laughing? Like, are the trees alive?
Can we look at that as a clue for a second that second book is called The Likeness?
The Likeness,
not
yeah.
The Twin.
No, The Likeness, yeah.
The
yeah.
Likeness of two people. Although, I think they're.
Or
they
The
have
Likeness
to be twins.
Of. Two situations, the first in the 80s and 2006.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did either of you guys read the book by Donna Tartt, The Secret History?
No.
Okay, this is reminding me so she much wrote for some reason. She wrote Goldfinch.
Yes.
But her other book, Secret History, is kind of about these students, really upper class, and they basically starve themselves and take a load of drugs and run naked through the woods to try and see the secrets of the universe. And it just reminds me so much of that situation with those Trinity students in that house near the woods and the Dr. Hanley and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and I'd be
something
shocked now if
that.
Dr. Hanley doesn't know those students.
Also, Adam was found clutching a tree.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Literally. I thought Hannah he was tied French. To it.
I've told you about her. Her new book is called The Witch Elm. It's about a skull that's found in a tree. She loves a fucking tree.
Yeah, so I wrote my last note there in that section was, are the trees alive? Okay.
Something going on with the trees.
Why was Adam so cruel to Cassie? I know we touched on that earlier. Basically, his attitude was so bad that she's actually gone back into being an undercover guard.
Yeah.
So why was he like that? Is Adam playing everyone? And did he... I don't know. I don't think so. I thought that last week. I don't think that anymore. I think that Adam actually was... There's something
no, I think
with
he's just he's incapable of feelings and love.
When he shredded the note or demanded for Quigley to get rid of the note, I thought that's really suspicious and he's covering up.
Yeah.
When he reacted to Cassie touching him, I thought it was more like a victim, maybe a PTSD
yeah.
reaction that he doesn't seem to have control over or know about what entirely happened to him.
Yeah.
And at some
so
point...
So I'm jumping between the two.
Was it Sandra Scully or there was somebody that he asked when he was asking about questions about Jamie and Peter? He also asked a question about himself that I feel like he didn't need to ask. He just did it. He was getting a bit of a kick out of it, definitely.
Or he just doesn't know what the fuck happened
yeah,
to
maybe.
Him.
Yeah, maybe.
Also, we got an email in from Tracy Hells.
Oh, an email.
Hey, Tracy.
Hello, Tracy. Thank you for listening. She says, I think the other... twin is in the coffin, which is why Mammy got all confused and upset about the colour of the coffin lining. She knows which twin is in the coffin already.
I'll be
so
damned.
Tracy thinks the same, that the twins have swapped.
Yeah, she said like the mum knows who's in the
line,
other twin is in the coffin.
I'm not asleep.
Yeah.
Obsessed
yeah.
with it.
Absolutely.
She knows. Let's put her in the group of people that are going to crack things.
Who do you guys think killed Katie now? Do you have any more? No, now it's, I know it's taken a huge turn.
I think Rosalind or Jess.
Rosalind.
Katie. I think Katie is still alive.
Yes, is yeah. Jess.
I think Katie, alive Katie, potentially killed her sister Jess. And
yeah.
I think someone who was involved in 1985 took advantage of it. I think it took advantage of placing the body in the woods, if you get me.
Yeah.
I don't think Katie's death had anything to do with what happened, but I think someone took advantage of the body. So people, maybe adults that would have known about the body, Simone.
Yeah.
Would you have gone and told Simone? You probably would. They're quite close. Sandra Scully, who seems to be on the road, she could have passed by and said, let me take this body and lay it out, make a point about what happened and unearth the whole case and get it reinvestigated.
So true. Alicia. Could be someone who or it could be Shane.
Or Alicia or Shane. Let me put this body back Shane. In the woods and get, let's remind the police that they need to find my, you know, let's take the advantage truth. Of this death and connect it back to 1985 and let's try and get the case happening again.
Well, then it's Rob doing it for some weird...
Alicia. Yeah. She's the one that's running around trying to find Peter and Jamie yeah. still and no one has listened to her. She's going to guard the helplines. Did she put that... I just think the murder and the body placement are two separate coincidental things.
And that's actually so... Cause
and
she
Alicia
literally...
lives on the road with the Devlins.
Does she?
Mm. Yeah,
that's Sandra's good. Well, she does because she knocked over straight after the funeral procession, unless. And then don't forget, Mrs. Fitzgerald is there as well.
Speaking of
Need
Alicia,
loads more from her
did any of you
week.
Ever watch? Yeah, I know, I missed her this week. Did any of you guys ever watch Glen Rowe?
I actually never got into Glen Rowe.
Me either, but I read this online on entertainment.ie. Alicia is played by an actress called Eunice MacMenamin, and she played Fidelma in Glen Rowe.
Well, there you are now.
Yeah. And we got another email in, and this is something that I never even thought of or whatever even come into my mind. So this is an email that we got in from Wendy Rayner, and she says, "Hey gang, this occurred to me in the shower. I always have my best ideas there. You do get good ideas when you're in the shower. Anyway,
I do all my thinking in the shower, all of it.
Always." She goes, "We seem to have been shown that Lexi is / was Cassie's imaginary friend following her trauma. What if Peter and Jamie were also imaginary to Adam specifically, or somehow the whole town? ?" Some sort of experiential gas or nerve agent, too much like Sherlock. I've never watched Sherlock, so I didn't get that, but I knew you two would. She goes, "I'm also thinking that Katie is Jessica and they were never twins." Yeah.
Baskerville episode she's talking about.
Oh, okay. She goes, another figment of either Margaret or the town again. And then she goes, "The thing with the pink and the blue, the dancing, the sleeping arrangements in that house, it's all so weird." And she goes, "Also, the whole woods laughing wolves is singing me right back to the books I read as a kid, specifically Penelope Lively and all of those old ones, Standing Stones, Forest Folk." So
no, I'm not familiar.
I'm not
with
familiar
those.
With them either. But no.
Maybe tell us a little bit more about that.
And then she said that she's not up to Irish legend, but there's always been stories of sprites and woodland people, good and bad. Feels like they may be in the mix here. So that's supernatural element. And she said that she's going to read the books afterwards because
I'm going
to
read them.
It
afterwards.
Definitely does make you want to.
Yeah, I was going to hold off on the books until all three series of air, but then I'm like, no, I'm just going to read in the woods and the likeness.
Yeah, I'll read one and two. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, one and two. So, guys, we probably are more confused now than we were.
I feel like I'm on some sort of a path, but it could be the completely wrong path.
Yeah, but I like that though. We're only halfway through as well. Yeah. There's 4 hours left of this show.
A lot can happen and a lot can change.
So what are we looking to find out? We need, the big kind of questions are, well, so there's obviously huge questions such as who is Lexi? Then a sub question would be who is her? She's pregnant. Who's she pregnant with?
Yeah.
Did Frank know about her? How did she get access to the ID? Who the fuck are those Trinity students and why are they living in that weird house in the woods? Was Dr. Hanley at that house party? I think he was.
What happened at the house party?
I'd still like to know who is Cassie. After her parents died in the crash, did her aunt keep her? Did she send her off to boarding school as well? Did Cassie and Rob meet over there because the aunt couldn't handle her?
When
did Cassie and Rob meet?
Yes. Yeah. Show it to us, please.
And was Cassie always... Definitely, I need to know more about her.
Yes.
Where is Helen? Where's Mrs. Fitzgerald? Is Mrs. Fitzgerald evil?
Who's Helen again?
Helen's the housemate.
Oh yeah, where is Helen? Who killed Katie? What's going on with the pink and blue?
Is
What's
the mum
going
like,
on with the phone? Jess is the password.
The phone.
That's a fucking clue.
Is the mum basically like her whole life been living in absolute? What's the word? Like, is the mum suffering so badly because of what happened in 1985? Because
she's
covered up
drugged.
A serious.
I think
she's drugged,
drugged,
but I think
yeah.
that she's being drugged because she covered up a crime that.
She was forced to cover up a crime. So she gave the three lads, Shane, Carl and John, the alibi, which, let's be honest, she made it up. Like, I think that's probably fair to say.
Yeah, totally.
Also, what's going on with Dec McCabe, the detective who worked on Until the Bitter End and wrote in his notebook in 1987 that was then discovered by Quigley, shredded by Quigley and then taped back together
by
Adam?
Yeah.
How much does Rob know?
Why
and is he playing
bleeding?
Both sides?
Why wasn't he bleeding?
Yeah, there's so many questions, and hopefully we're going to get some answers next
and
week.
And who's Fran from Love Hate?
Yeah, who? I know. I was like, he's
right,
in there.
Midgie.
Yeah, and he was like to Lexi, oh, keeping a low profile, are you? So he knew Lexi as well.
We're going to see more from Lexi, and
But did he know the old Lexi? I just couldn't figure out if they look alike, and did he actually know Cassie?
Oh, Jesus.
My head is actually spinning.
Hopefully we'll get some answers next week.
We'll get loads of answers next week because Cassie is going undercover as Lexi into that student accommodation.
The mansion.
English manor. The Irish manor.
So we'll find out loads.
And I do feel like we have got loads of answers even between episode 3 and 4. I feel like we got loads of answers in 4. So just we'll keep that jump going.
Yeah, absolutely. If you think we've missed anything or some of our theories are wild or you have theories that are even wilder, please get in touch. shrinepod@gmail.com or you can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We are at shrinepod.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it, really? I just need to go off and have a long share and think about all this now.
I'm going to go cast a spell. I feel very mystical after that episode.
I might start a notebook like Jack McCabe and just scribble my thoughts and theories into it all week like a mad person.
And then I'll just shred them.
This is TV Worth Talking About. So we want to hear what you have to say. Find Shrine Podcasts on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Shrine Pod.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.